Fast Eddie, once again, large and in charge here at Oshkosh. And in front of me here in the studio, we have Miss Jane Healy, who has written a book. It's called The Wright's European Odyssey. Hello, Jane. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much, Eddie, for having me today. I'm so proud of our hometown brothers, the Wright brothers from Dayton, Ohio, who went to Europe and showed the world the airplane. And because they went there in 1908 and 1909, we are celebrating the centennial this year.
Wow, it's been 100 years on that already?
America did not believe there was a future to flight. They didn't believe they could fly, so they had to go all the way over to Europe.
You know, it's amazing because in that 100-year time, things have changed just a little bit now, haven't they?
I'm sure Orville and Wilbur would like to see the changes.
And the thing is, they improvised an awful lot, but they were also very scientific in their methods, too. So anyway, after December 17th of 1903, they went to Europe in 1908 and 1909, like you said. What was the purpose of their visit?
In 04 and 05, they perfected the airplane and they put it away. So after much negotiation for some years, finally it was decided they would go to France. France gave them their chance, and they would pay them well if they could meet their contract. In the spring of 08, Wilbur went over and he picked up the plane in Le Havre, where they had left it the year before. Someone had gotten into it. It took him 2 months to put it together again.
Wow.
And he got ready to fly it in Le Mans. They were calling them the Lying Brothers, Flyers or Liars. Everyone knew that they couldn't fly. And he was putting it together at a little race course 10 miles outside of Le Mans, and no one knew what earth-shattering event would take place in that little race course.
And, it was certainly earth-shattering because I'm sure the French were stunned.
Yes, the aviation enthusiasts and the balloonists were at the field the first day, and there were about 30 people. The next day, there were 2,000. The day after that, 4,000. And then by the time they got to Pau, in the winter, there were routinely 50,000 at their field, and then at the end of the year, they were there for a year. They made about 300 flights. When Orville was flying in Potsdam, it was routinely for half an hour. Wilbur's first flight was a minute and 43 seconds. But by then, he was flying for a half an hour routinely, and he would have a half a million people at his flights. You can see in the pictures that everyone was thrilled, looking up, their faces smiling. They were in shock.
Well,
it was magic. No one could believe their eyes.
Yeah, and the thing of it being is they did a very, very difficult task. You know, everybody thinks it's impossible right up to the point where you do it. But, you know, the Wright brothers really, they took a very scientific approach to what they did. They just didn't get in and say, hey, let's build an airplane. They relied on a lot of other people's work and efforts, most notably Otto Lilienthal, who was out there doing gliding. As a matter of fact, they based a lot of their wing research on tables that Otto Lilienthal came up with, only to discover that Otto was wrong. That's how they came up with the wind tunnel and everything. And
He was their inspiration.
Oh, yes, very much. And Octave Chanute was as well.
Yes, yes, also, but Lilienthal died gliding. They said sacrifices must be made. They wrote a wonderful book that's in the library here at the field on the bird flight. And the Wright studied this, and it helped them. They went to a small town in Germany, and they studied the storks flying. Mm-hmm. And Orville and Wilbur always thought that, you know, if birds can fly and storks, well, mankind can fly. They always knew that they would do it.
It was the Wright brothers that discovered the third axis, the yaw axis, and that's what killed Lilienthal, because he went into a spiral dive, and without opposite rudder, he couldn't get out of it. Lilienthal, I believe, in the crash broke his back and died like 3 days later. It was a terrible loss.
Yes, very sad. They did give the credit to Lilienthal, and you are right. They had to make up their own tables. They were following other people's tables, and they were finally able to show it. They taught people to fly in all the fields, all six fields, in Le Mans, in Po, in France, in Rome, and in Berlin and Potsdam.
You know,
well, you have to give them a great deal of credit. They, in Europe, they were only flying at treetop level. I don't think people realize that's But by the end of the year, when Orwell was in Potsdam, he broke a world's record flying at 1,600 feet. You can imagine how the people felt when they first saw this flight in Le Mans. You know how you felt at Kitty Hawk, waiting for that plane. So it was magic.
It really was. It had to be different back then over in Le Mans because they'd never seen an airplane before. And just a few minutes before all this hoopla with the reconstruction, Air Force One went by.
In an instant they realized what it was. It didn't take long to register. When the Kings would come out to the field and see Wilbur fly, in an instant they realized they didn't know whether to invest in dirigibles for their armies or for the fixed wing of for the airplane, but in a second they saw the future.
Oh, absolutely. All you had to do was...
The King of England wondered what would happen to his great navy. You know, they were so isolated in England.
Well, it was very simple. They adapted ships so that they could use aircraft as well, and it turned out to be a major factor.
It made England a little vulnerable.
Well, maybe, but you know what? The British, being who they are, their stiff upper lip, they found a way to adapt and improvise like everybody else did.
Charles Rolls over there, he went up with them, and he bought the first airplane. And very sadly, he was a good friend of Wilbur's, and he died in that plane in Bournemouth in England in a show. But they're still using his engines in airplanes today.
Yeah, that's right. Rolls-Royce.
That's right.
And they're still building cars, too, as I recall. Very nicely handcrafted cars, too. Okay. But I have to tell you, my heart lies with the Rolls-Royce engines. The Merlin.
Charles Rolls was the most elegant aeronaut of all of them, of the early.
And you know something? The engine certainly shows his touch to it. It is a magnificent power plant.
They're still used.
They're still used. And here at Oshkosh, you hear a lot of them. We don't have many Wright aircraft here, but we sure got plenty of Charles Rolls stuff.
Flight would have never gotten off the ground.
This is very true. Jane, where can we get a copy of this book?
Well, it's sold in the bookstore here, and I have a website, Aerial Trail, AerialTrail.com, but it's over in the bookstore here, and I'm writing a trilogy on the Wright brothers. They're celebrating the centennial in a very big way in France, and with this Paris Air Show, and we should be very proud of these two Americans who went over and showed flight to the world and introduced it, and they came back and were guests at the White House with Taft, and their lives were never the same again.
That's for sure.
And the world was never the same again.
No, it wasn't. And to go and stand out there at Kill Devil Hills and look at the rail and the markers and realize this was the first. These guys did it all. They started this thing. They figured out aerodynamics and controls, power plants, and lift and drag equations. The whole, all of aviation comes right back to that moment, December 17th, 1903, when they first broke ground. Level flight under control. That was the key. And the other interesting fact, at the Air and Space Museum, down in on the Washington Mall in D.C., the airplane is displayed higher than it ever actually flew.
I didn't realize that.
They only got to about, I think it was about 6 feet off the ground. That was their maximum altitude. But you didn't need altitude. The fact that they flew what was soon to become the wingspan of a present-day 727 was in itself a major feat.
Well, they were there a whole year and introduced the airplane. And, you know, I think this is the greatest epic of mankind. It's a true story. And everyone famous came to their field. They were so brave in going. They risked their lives every time
they
went up.
Yes, they did. It is a tremendous story. It's one that deserves to be told. And Jane Healy is here. The book is Wright's European Odyssey. Our author here is Jane Healy.
But I thank you so much for the interview.
Well, thank you, Jane. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to EAA Radio, and I'm Fast Eddie.